Welcome to Run With It, Canada's running fitness and health program. Back on the show, we have Dr. Bob Weil for the Sports Doctor is in segment, so stay tuned for that. But first, let's go to our segment on culinary medicine. Check this out.
I'm excited to have back on the show as my guest, Shirley Garrett. Shirley is a multi-talented individual who has been a personal trainer since 1994, and she's also an in-demand national board certified health and wellness coach specializing in lifestyle medicine, culinary medicine, and she's a trained chef with a professional culinary arts diploma and also does coaching and behavioral change. She's back on the show for part two of the part three series. And last month, Shirley, we talked about lifestyle medicine and the benefits. This month, we're talking about culinary medicine. Welcome back, Shirley.
Thank you.
Yeah. So tell us, what is culinary medicine and why did you choose the specialty?
Well, first I'll define culinary medicine by quoting a highly respected lifestyle medicine doctor in California who is also an organic farmer. And he defines culinary medicine as a new evidence-based field in medicine that blends the art of food and cooking with the science of medicine. And part B of your question about how I got involved or why I chose it. I got involved in culinary medicine after working for 25 plus years in the fitness and medical exercise field. And after attending numerous fitness and lifestyle medicine conferences, it became clear that I wasn't the only one noticing that my clients and my rehabilitation clients in fitness were often missing the mark on achieving healthy weight and better health. And it was usually not because of lack of exercise, but it was due to their poor diet quality or eating habits. So as I was already working as a certified health and wellness coach, in addition to the fitness, it was obvious to me that culinary coaching would work well for people who needed to improve their important behaviors related to food quality and quantity. So I decided to go to culinary school and equip myself with the information that was credible and the skills that I needed. But even so, coaching is not teaching. Coaching is helping the client set their goals and come to their own decisions about what they'll do. But culinary coaching is a little different because it also has an extra dimension, which requires knowledge and skills and education, a few cooking skills. So culinary coaching combines the best of healthy eating and cooking and also coaching.
Wow. And I mean, so how important is culinary medicine and what are, you know, some of the benefits?
Well, I think it's fairly well known, and if it isn't, it is well documented if people read the research, that eating a healthy, balanced diet is one of the most important things you can do to protect your lifelong health. And the science, the research that you'll find on some of the links that I share, tells us that up to 80% of premature heart disease and stroke can be prevented through your life choices and habits. Of course, being physically active, most of us know that, but also by eating a healthy diet, mostly plant-based, and whenever possible, the food prepared at home.
Wow. So plant-based and foods that you cook at home. And so next question, how important to have home-cooked meals then and eating together?
Oh my goodness. This can go on. Eating home-cooked meals with your family and friends goes so far beyond the nutritional benefits of eating healthy ingredients. And some of those other benefits, I'd like to mention them here because the social benefits of not just eating together, but even cooking together can increase confidence and boost the enjoyment of your life. And there's another sort of psychological and social joy of feeding the people you love. It can enhance your own confidence and improve your motivation and your relationship. And one more thing that I'd like to say about that is that cooking and all that accompanies cooking, like shopping and prepping your ingredients and planning, knowing that you're nourishing yourself and your family and your friends, it can reduce symptoms of depression and increase your self-efficacy.
Fascinating. And Shirley, what questions do you often get asked?
Well, I get asked a lot of questions, and I'm just trying to think here of what might be the best thing. I do have a scenario, if you'll indulge me, if you don't mind. It sort of encompasses all the questions, such as how can I use food if I don't cook well? How can I use cooking and healthy eating to lose the weight that I want to lose? I don't even know where to start in the kitchen. I don't have confidence. My husband is a picky eater, so he likes it when we order out, but he's overweight now. So all the aspects, if you will indulge me, I have a little information about a specific scenario where I was engaged by a family to be their culinary and health and wellness coach. And I'd like to just sort of set that up by just saying that there is a lot of documentation that when children, this is before I start on the what we call a question, although it's more of a scenario that I'd like to tell as quickly as I can. First of all, children, if they grow up learning how to participate in cooking and making meals and becoming comfortable cooking and eating home-cooked food, they are likely to have longer lives, and those lives will include cooking and eating a home-cooked meal. So starting early is really important. So I have lots of examples, but that might be another story. But in keeping with the comments that I just made, I want to tell this real-life scenario from a few years ago where I was retained as the family's culinary coach, and it just hits all the marks of what you're asking about. So the lady of the house, the wife, the mother, she said to me two things. I don't mind trying to eat healthier meals at home, but two things stop me. I don't feel comfortable cooking. I've never learned how to do it well. And B, my husband and my two young children are picky eaters. So those were her two comments, not necessarily formed like a question, but what they needed to do was lose weight, eat better, get the kids to stop being so picky. The husband wanted to eat well. And so as a coach, first of all, you asked me, what are the questions? That's the question. Those are the questions and types of questions I get. I don't know if you want me to talk about how we solved it and had a great success story, or if that's a story for another time.
Yes. Well, Ashley, share what the outcome came about.
Okay. Well, I'll keep it as brief as I can. But it's a bit of a long thing. It took a year for this to go. So she had her 1 year vision of getting this all done, losing weight, no picky kids, eating well, cooking at home, being confident. So her vision included that. So we set these up in short-term goals. And one of her first things was to set a SMART goal of starting to learn how to get groceries so they have healthy food in the house, because she had a toddler in a high chair. I think toddlers are in high chairs. It was someone, a little one in it. I don't have kids, but it was a child in a high chair and a five-year-old girl, a preschooler. And so going to the grocery store was a nightmare for her. So her first goal toward that vision of eating well at home was, how am I going to get healthy groceries in the house? So with the help of our goal setting, she went to the supermarket that had online ordering. This was a few years ago, so it wasn't quite as common as it might be now. And she ordered her groceries online, and then it was easy to strap the kids into the car and go pick them up at the grocery store at the drive-thru when they called and said it was ready. So she didn't have to tow the kids to the grocery store. That was one of her big barriers. She couldn't do it, but now she could. So she solved that problem. And then once they started having fresh produce in the house, and her picky kids wouldn't, and her husband also didn't want to eat certain things. But for kids, if they have a hand in choosing what goes on their plate, if they get some say, they're going to eat it. So she bought colorful fruits and vegetables, and then she'd cut up carrots into nice little matchsticks, and she would slice zucchini into little half moons. And she bought purple cabbage and sliced it. So lots of colors. And she let her daughter, her five-year-old, choose what goes in the meal. And it happened to be that they were going to add a few convenience factors into this whole new thing about cooking and eating well at home. And so what they just, and one more thing, the husband was picky, but also said he agreed healthier meat rather than red meat would be good. Maybe some fish twice a week. That was another goal. So, but the fish was dry. She tried it and he complained, dry. Well, she's not a great cook, but she's learning. And so together we set more goals. Parchment paper for cooking. Well, you can't cook dry food in there. It will always steam and be moist. And it was fun for the kids. So what she did was she bought fresh fish. She prepared colorful vegetables that her daughter could choose what goes in her own parchment packet. Each piece of parchment that goes in the oven got a piece of fish. And then each piece of parchment got an array of pre-cut vegetables that the mom cut up, and the daughter got to choose what she wanted. She got to choose for her daddy what goes on his fish, and her little brother in the high chair, he gets some fish on a parchment. And then they used a plastic jar. Glass is good, but because the daughter was getting involved and she's just little, we used plastic with a nice lid and a little sesame oil, soy sauce, lemon juice, and garlic went into this jar, and the daughter got to shake it up like a vinaigrette and poured a little on top of each flat piece of parchment with the fish and the colorful vegetables that she had chosen. So she's going to eat them because she chose them. And then she got to wrap up everybody's individual parchment. She thought it was like a present for daddy. And with a Sharpie marker, she wrote a D on daddy's parchment packet. She wrote her mom M for mommy on her packet, and her own initial and her brother's initial. So the daughter got very involved and very invested in this meal. And so this tray of all these four parchment packets with beautiful fresh fish and vegetables and a little vinaigrette went into the oven. When it came out, it's full of steam. So you have to be careful with your fingers, kids especially, that you don't open it and get burned. But they carefully opened them, and daddy got his packet with the D on it, and so on. And I got a great big photo, a beautiful photo with great big smiles of the whole family just happily eating fish that wasn't dry, colorful vegetables. The daughter had a chance to get comfortable in the kitchen as the mom tried something new. So to me, that hit all the notes about healthy eating, healthy cooking, and getting the kids involved, and stop having the husband be picky and the fish isn't dry. So that's my story, and it will stay with me forever.
You're changing people's lives, lead a healthier lifestyle, and wonderful, Shirley. And, you know, for more information, where can people go?
I think the simplest way would be to go to my website. My email address is attached to the website. So the website, first of all, is proactivehealthcoach.com, all one word, no hyphens. And my email address, they can contact me through the website or just email me Shirley, Shirley, at proactivehealthcoach.com.
Thank you for joining me today. And stay tuned for next month, because we're talking about coaching and behavioral change along with Dr. Owen Garrett. So stay tuned. Joining me is Dr. Bob Weil, and he's back on the show for the Sports Doctor Is In segment, and he's going to be talking about shin splints. Welcome back, Dr. Bob.
Hi, Christine. It's always nice to be back with you. You know, the world of sports medicine education, it's a pleasure to participate with you as a serious runner yourself, a previous competitor, and we've had some great topics that we've covered on Run With It. And one of the common problems, when we've talked about common problems, last month we talked about plantar fasciitis, is so-called shin splints. Even though shin splints, Christine, are not a medical diagnosis, pain in the bottom of the leg between the knee and the ankle, usually on the inside of the shin bone, is the common area of discomfort. And it could be anything from a stress fracture to tendonitis to a muscle imbalance. So we tell people all the time, you need to get a proper diagnosis if you see that you're dealing with this on an ongoing or a recurring basis. You know, sometimes in the beginning of a season, when the ground is hard, think football practice and the ground is like frozen, or getting on that basketball court, running hard all of a sudden, where we overuse those muscles, that happens. But many times we see when it's recurrent or persistent, gee, you know, Dr. Weil, every time I get to that 3-4 times a week, every time I try to do that 3 to 5 miles at a time, et cetera, et cetera, my shins hurt. And many times we're telling people that when that's the case, we take a look at the foot mechanics. As a sports podiatrist, I could say to you, over 85% of the so-called shin problems I see that are persistent or ongoing in joggers or runners are foot-related, where we see, for example, that over-pronation, excessively flat foot, straining the muscle trying to stabilize that position. Every time you hit the ground when you're running, you're hitting the ground with 2-3 times your weight. And we're getting this rapid rolling into the foot, pronation of the foot, which is a normal motion. And the tendon and muscle called the posterior tibial tendon, which runs down the back of the calf as a muscle. And once it hits the ankle, it changes into a tendon and it inserts into the arch almost like a hammock in 4 or 5 locations. The job of that muscle tendon, slow that foot collapse down. Control the collapse of the foot so that you could spring off in the next direction. When that foot is collapsing excessively, we're constantly straining and overusing that muscle. And this is when we start to see the discomfort and or the tendonitis and or, if we don't pay attention, sometimes stress fracture where the bone is saying enough already, you know, where a runner tries to push through the discomfort. You guys are famous for that, you know, which is don't slow me down. You know, I want to be able to try to push through. And sometimes we'll see. So again, imagine the high arch foot, the other extreme, hitting the ground like a brick. And sometimes it's that shock that goes up the lower leg also that can be oriented. So whether it's the flat-footed person, for example, on the left, or the high-arched person on the right, or the knock-kneed young lady in the middle, or the other guy with bow legs, all of these factors are related when we start seeing any of these running-related problems, and shin splints is a great example and a common one. Your type of shoe that you're in, you know, there's been so much emphasis, Christine, over this past few years, lighter is better, less support is better, you know, where we had barefoot running and let's run with the least supportive shoe. And we started seeing a lot more overuse problems than we bargained for. So being in the right shoe makes a lot of sense. And this is why, of course, I'm prejudiced as a sports podiatrist. But if you're a serious runner, you want a podiatrist on your team. Mm-hmm. You want a physical therapist on your team, because getting stronger, talking to you about the kinds of exercises you should be doing. You know, another segment we did in the past, again, was the idea of personal training and, you know, what kind of strengthening should runners be doing to stay out of trouble? And shin splints is a great example where treatment becomes many times important. And you know, one of our famous expressions that you runners, it's not your favorite, intelligent rest.
Yes.
Be a walker for a week or two. Back off your mileage. Investigate what you're dealing with so that 6 months later, you don't need to take 2 months off because, man, you got a stress fracture. Now we got to really back off, maybe put you in a boot. So you want to pay attention to these running-related injuries. Remember, again, running is the same position, foot strike after foot strike after foot strike. Everything's the same, a lot of hitting the same way. So overuse becomes a concern. And one of the key overuse problems, like we mentioned last week with plantar fasciitis of the arch and the heel, is aggravating the shins. Next time we'll go to the back of the leg, we'll talk about Achilles tendonitis.
Yeah.
Same stuff where we would say to your runners and listeners, if your lower extremity problem is persistent, whether it's your back or your hips or your knees or your feet and ankles, then you want to be looking at the mechanics. How's your alignment? And again, this is like when we've talked about orthotics as being one of our best weapons to enhance your alignment, whether you're a superstar or a grandmother. And I'm going to throw in after those examples, having one leg slightly longer than another or having a hip rotation problem, which might be related to, especially if you're running every day or 4 or 5 days a week or 6 days a week, or how much mileage do you put in a week?
About 50.
Yeah, 50 that, you're serious. Yeah, 50 miles. You've stayed out of trouble semi forever. You know, and I know you write down some of our recommendations. At least
yes.
I hope you do.
You know, I do.
Right. Those are the two things, again, Christine, when we talk on Run With It, talk about the sports doc, the two things all athletes and runners care about. Can I prevent trouble? Prevent injuries, number one. And can I enhance my performance if that's what I'm interested in? Can I be faster? Can I have more endurance? Can I be more high performance? And those are the two things we all care about. And this is why I, you know, enjoy my participation on Run With It and the Sports Doctors in Segment, because we can share some of these important points so that more and more of your runners stay out of trouble, even if they're top competitors or they just want to use running and jogging or walking as a fitness activity, which is, you know, so highly recommended.
Yes. And Dr. Bob, like, for more information, where can we go?
Gee, did I use up my 8 minutes already? It's amazing. Yes. Right. If people go to sportsdoctorradio.com, they could find out when my radio show is. It's live every week from 3 to 4 Central Standard Time on BBS Radio. They can read a lot of my articles. They can see all sorts of different hoopla with our participation, with our thousands of followers on Twitter and Instagram. So the best place to go is sportsdoctorradio.com. And then they can also, if they go to radio shows, they could hear the half a dozen times or more that you've been a guest on the Sports Doctor, because you and I, we like trading radio shows. So, you know, they can go to that site, Christine. It's always a pleasure.
Yes, thank you very much, Dr. Bob. Well, and we'll have you back.
Hey, everybody. See you next time.
Thanks for watching. If you have a question or comment about today's episode, go to our website, which is runwithit.ca. Until next time, run with it.
Run With It is sponsored by the BC Sports Hall of Fame, Mallory's Fashion Network, Craft Academy Salon, and proactive health coach, Shirley Garrett.